Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The following is an interview of Paravishna Swami by Bhakti Vikara Swami about the development of ISKCON activities in Bangladesh, conducted on the 7th of November 1994 in Vrindavan.
Srila Prabhupada himself used to travel in East Bengal during his household life. There's information in the Prabhupada Lilamrita that Prabhupada recalled one time, one doctor in Dhaka, he met him and he told that he'd heard one man, he knew by the way he was coughing, that he wouldn't survive the rest of the day. So Prabhupada also used to visit her. Now, the first devotee he sent was Garga Muni, and he sent him, at that time Bangladesh was East Pakistan, and the Indo-Pak War was about to erupt. It was the Bangladesh Liberation War turned into an Indo-Pak War in 71. And Brahmananda was in West Pakistan, which is now, at that time it was all Pakistan. So, but there's some reference to that in some Prabhupada's letters. We'd have to ask Garga Muni more about that. We don't seem to know much. He met Muni Maharaj in the Gaudiya Math, who's still the presiding functionary there, very old now. And he met a few people, but he wasn't able to do much because of the war situation. He had to come back. And then the next devotee to go after that was who?
Myself, I went on the library party.
Pancharatna, when did he go after that?
Yeah, just after that.
Okay, you'd like to tell us how you came to go to Bangladesh?
Well, I was on the library party. We've traveled all over India selling sets of Prabhupada's books in all the libraries and universities. And after we more or less completed all the main institutions in India, we started traveling to some neighboring countries like Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka. So the first time I went, Garga Muni at our library, he was also the leader of the library party in India at that time, with the organizer.
Which year was that?
That was in 76 and 77 going on. So
it was early 76, I think you may have gone to Bangladesh?
No, we were doing India. We started that work in sort of spring 76, library party, and we worked throughout India all of the rest of the year and into 77. And some parties were still doing different parts of India. There were a number of bands, but myself and one other devotee, we went to visit these neighboring countries to see if we could get some orders. So that was in early 77, and Prabhupada was actually interested in getting the Gaudiya Math, use of the Gaudiya Math, where Garga Muni had stayed when he went back in 71. So because it's quite a big building from the location in the center of the city, so there were some things Prabhupada wanted to know about that, so Garga Muni had me. While I was there, I had to go to some lawyers and go to the Gaudiya Math and just check out the situation and see the possibilities. And
this is in Calcutta or Bangladesh?
No, this is in Bangladesh.
Uh-huh.
I think I met that lawyer, B.B. Roy Chowdhury.
So you didn't tell us actually how you came to go to Bangladesh? You met Calcutta?
No, that was a bit later. Actually,
you went there first on
library work, yeah.
And you did a little extra on.
Yeah, I had to make some inquiries. I had to go to Gaudiya Math.
Garga Muni told you to do that on the Prabhupada's instruction.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And then when I came, we got some orders for books in the Dhaka University Library.
I asked if he also went on library party work at some point. He told me.
Yeah, I think that he had to maybe take some books there that we got orders for.
I see.
He had to go and take them there a little bit later. He was also a member of
the library party, yeah.
You know, I can see that there's a lot of Hindus, especially who are Vaishnav-leaning, and seemed an interesting place to preach. So after returning then from visiting those three countries, it was Mayapur Festival, and after Mayapur Festival we went back to Bombay, which was then the base of the library party. just land out, you know, just ongoing activities. And I had an invitation to go to Eastern Europe to do library party work there with Ganesham, who's now about to give them around. And so I was feeling that, you know, there wasn't that much more work to do in India, and there were other boys doing it, and the boys, other boys had become trained up to do it. But the main institution had been covered. So I was interested in maybe going to Eastern Europe, or else I was thinking maybe it's good to go to Bangladesh and try to start some preaching there. But Gargamuni, he didn't want me to leave the library party, so he told Prabhupada's secretary, who was Kamal Krishnamurti, not to let me see Prabhupada unless there was a letter from him giving permission.
Can you were trying to see Prabhupada to get permission to...
Just ask him, you know, what would be a better thing to do. And
Bangladesh or Eastern Europe.
Yes. So,
Hans Duda?
Just a minute. There's something else I was just thinking. Javataka Maharaj.
Javataka Maharaj encouraged you to go to Bangladesh.
I had talked with him a bit, and he was encouraging me.
Yeah, yeah.
He was made a GBC at that...
He just made GBC.
Just at that time, he became the GBC. Just after I'd come back then, he was, there was a main GBC meeting, he was made the GBC of Eastern India and Bangladesh. So he was very enthusiastic to recruit devotees in those days, you know. He would go everywhere and try to convince people to come to Mayapur and his zone. So he was preaching to me, actually, to go to Bangladesh. And he wanted me just to go, and I said, well, if I can't do that, I have to go to Bombay and ask Prabhupada if possible. And, and you know, I have to speak with Gargamuni and so forth. So he said, okay, well, you know, fine. And so when I came, like I said, I couldn't get to see Prabhupada. But Hansa Duda had gone in to see Prabhupada about preaching in Sri Lanka. Prabhupada was encouraging him, and he just happened to mention to Prabhupada that I was interested in going to Bangladesh. So somehow or other, you know, just around that time, I was up in Prabhupada's quarters. I was not in the room, but I was in the corridor. Right,
is this Prabhupada's quarters in the guest house?
Yes, new quarters.
You just moved in then?
Just moved in. And somehow the door opened, the servant came out, the Prabhupada saw me, and I was in the corridor, and he called me and and says, he said, sit down. And then he said, you have made the right decision. He said, this is the right decision. You should go to Bangladesh immediately and start preaching there and teach them to chant Hare Krishna.
He said it's a very good preaching field, something like that?
Yeah, he talked to me actually about it several times.
I see, a different
During that, before I went in Bombay.
One time he gave you his garland as a blessing to go?
Yeah.
He showed a lot of interest, he called you several times.
Yeah, he was very interested. He talked all about the Gaudiya Math, about trying to get the Gaudiya Math, and, you know, how, I think he said that he had saved it before, the Tirtha Maharaj wanted to.
That's right, yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. Someone told me, it was Jyoti Shekhar, who I interviewed for these books. He said that Jyoti Shekhar had saved it. Tirtha Maharaj wanted to sell it off, and he said, your Abhai, when he was a householder, he went to see the Maharaj of Baliati, who was living in Calcutta, and told him that this Kunjadai is going to do this, you don't allow this. That's right, yeah.
And the Prabhupada, he gave me, they told me how to find the Maharaj of Baliati and his family.
He said, Jyoti Shekhar told me that Abhai was the... He was like the only one to stand against Tirtha at the very beginning, because he was doing all these funny things.
And so he explained, he talked about the Gaudiya Math, and he told me...
Tirtha Maharaj wanted to sell it, actually.
Yeah, that's right. And he told me how to find the Maharaj of Balihadi in Calcutta, and suggested to go and see him. I actually went to meet them, but the family was, you know, they weren't so interested in... I think they've been kind of come cut off from Bangladesh. So anyway, like that, Prabhupada showed a lot of interest and gave a lot of encouragement.
There's several letters, aren't there, written? There's a letter to Tamal Krishna Maharaj about going to Jeshur, and there are different letters about getting the Gaudiya Math.
Especially about going to Jeshur, you can find those letters.
in the folio.
And there's a letter to Jayavataka Maharaj, I think.
He wrote to Mahakrishna, I think he was probably sending him there, and he said to distribute prasadam. But I don't think he ever went for some reason.
No, he didn't go.
And there's also some letter where he says that by doing kirtan, the Muslims will also be attracted.
Yes, he said that there was a mention of Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, and he said that we should
approach him. He said to approach him.
Yes, that's right. You should look up the letters. You'll see it all in there. Yeah. There's also some conversation with Jayavataka Maharaj.
In the conversations books.
The folio, you can find everything. Githaraj actually I've got in Mayapur.
It's a compilation of all these things.
Yeah, it's a compilation of different talks with myself and Prabhupada, things related to myself.
So you please send that to Jayavada Maharaj?
I've only got one copy, it's in Mayapur. But
when you get there, you can copy it and...
Yeah, I can try and find...
Whoever transcribes this cassette, if you haven't done it after that time, they can send a reminder to you to do it.
They sent me a reminder from Mayapur at the time of GBC meetings, and then that's where the book is.
Okay. So then you went to Bangladesh with...
Well, then I went to Delhi to get my visa.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada came to Delhi, and there was a darshan, and he saw me in the darshan, and he said, "You haven't gone yet." He was very kind of keen. He said, "You should go immediately." I said, "I've just come to get my visa, and then I'm leaving." And in the meantime, Jayavataka Maharaj himself had gone to Dhaka with a couple of devotees, and he moved into the Govinda Mandir in Wari.
Wari, that's now it's been donated to ISKCON.
After many years, it was donated, yes. So I arrived there, and they were already living there, so I joined them. And we traveled a bit to different
cities. Mymensingh you went to? I know you went to Mymensingh.
He went to Mymensingh before
Kishore
I came.
Kishore Ganj maybe. Also.
Yeah, we went together to Komila, Chittagong, and I think maybe Kishore Ganj. And we had very big programs, and there was a lot of interest there.
And it was a sensation for the Hindus, because Chaitanya Maharaj reported that time, remember he told Prabhupada that the Hindus are very despondent. They're being told by the Muslims that your religion is dying, and people all over the world are converting to Islam, and they didn't know there's not much at that time, especially there's not much outside information. So naturally their culture is Radha Krishna Gaur-Nitai Kirtan with Madangas and Kartals. So they were just ecstatic to see the Deva. They got so much inspiration.
We continued. Chaitanya Maharaj had to go back to Mayapur. We continued having programs. And
did you have books?
Well, then we got books. Somehow we got some books, I think. I remember once I went to Calcutta to get books, and I came back, and they were stopped on the border, and I had to go to Dhaka.
So Nijami.
And I found that printer, Nijami.
Nijami, yeah.
Before that, Pancharatna had been somewhere around.
Pancharatna came, he was head of the BBT in Calcutta for Bengali books, and he came to Bangladesh to see if they could print books cheaply, or because they were sending money from overseas, and they could send, kind of get some cheap thing for export or something like that. And at the same time, he maybe did a little preaching also.
Yeah, so he found Mr. Nijami. So that's how we first met him. But anyway, when I came and I got stuff, I went and I met him, and he gave me a letter actually. And with that letter, I managed to get the books into the country. And then we were having programs, and I remember that there was so much rush at the book table, the books would just get knocked over, and the table get knocked over, and the books would get scattered. So when we were in a temple doing a program, we try to find a room, and most of the rooms have bars and
windows. Yeah.
So we lock the door from the inside, people would queue up, and they'd give the money through the bars, and then we'd give them a book like that. One program in Chittagong in particular, there was about 7,000 people there. And Bhagavatam Rita was with us from Brazil, and he was distributing the books.
Big, tough guy.
Completely nice to see.
You couldn't hand them out quick enough. And people were in ecstasy to get them, because there had been no Hindu preaching. No one had dared to do it.
The people were incredibly respectful, and they were always offering their obeisances.
I'll get into more detail. I'll give a tape also talking about all this. So then you traveled around. And now Bangladesh was like your preaching field. So how did you go about developing? That was 77?
That was 77, yeah. And, well, we just carried on using Govinda Mandir as our base.
And there were so many invitations from all over the country.
Yes, many.
People got to know about it.
So then this incident happened in Mayapur.
Oh, right.
Shooting incident.
Right.
And it came in the newspapers in Bangladesh.
Right, you were in Bangladesh at the time, in Dhaka.
So, well, actually what happened was, as far as I can remember, we had gone to Barisal for a program.
Mm.
To
this time you used to walk around the street in dhotis and everything, shaved head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was not much caution, even though it was a Muslim country.
I can't remember for sure.
I think I remember you told me. Yeah.
Anyway, we went to Barisal, and we were in a town, Jalakati. And actually, the NSI, National Security Intelligence, sent some people there to bring us back to Dhaka.
Mm.
They actually arrested us at gunpoint. And they brought us to Barisal, and we had to go on the overnight steamer. Mm. And there was a guard with a gun, and they brought us back to Dhaka. They brought us straight to the...
They were respectful, and they did not really respect the council.
Yeah. Respectful. Firm. Respectful. They brought us back, and they brought us straight to the National Security Intelligence and into the office of a very high director there.
Mm.
And he said, look, you know, this is mainly a Muslim country, and you know, there's some very bad reports in the newspaper, because the newspapers in Bangladesh reported, like, you know, cruel foreign Vaishnavas shoot at timid Muslim villagers.
Mm.
You know, these kind of reports were there. So he said that we don't want any kind of problems in this country. He said you better leave.
Mm.
And he said you can come back later. Mm. And they actually gave us a letter saying that we were like persona non grata. But I don't think you can publish on this.
No, anyway.
You know, just for history's sake, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, what happened then was I came back to Calcutta. Well, actually, just at that time, I think. Well, it was a bit earlier. Some devotees had come and they reported that Prabhupada was ill. I think that's when Jayavataka Maharaj went back. When he heard Prabhupada was ill, he went back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, we came back later to Calcutta, Mayapur, and then Jayavataka Maharaj wanted me to take out one matador van and have travel secretary in West Bengal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking actually it would be good to try to start something in Nepal.
You've been there also, right?
Yeah, I've been also. So he let me go to Vrindavan. I said, I want to ask Srila Prabhupada. So he preached to me a bit to stay in Bengal, but then he said, all right, go. And he gave me a letter to Srila Prabhupada saying that I was interested to go to Nepal. So
that was in nobody's own at that time, was it? A lot of places weren't in anyone's own.
Yeah, might not have been. So
much of India was nowhere. No.
We went to... I went to Vrindavan and came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was actually very ill.
Was that when I saw you there, in October or something?
No, this was in July, July 77. We must have gone to Bangladesh in late April, and then we were there a couple of months, and then two and a half months, and then we had to come out. And then in July, to see Prabhupada, he was very ill. I came up to see him, and he was in the roof of his house.
Mm.
I'd never seen him so thin, very thin, and he had dark glasses on. But he was really pleased when I came, and there's actually a letter here. I think I've got it. You can hear what he said. Did I read it?
Yeah, this is. Okay, we're going to get that photocopied. Okay, then. So then you got involved in Nepal, and then how did again you get involved in Bangladesh?
Well, there's that letter of Prabhupada actually saying you got two nice preaching fields.
Uh-huh.
And so there was some discussion in there about printing books in Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
Just the relevance is in Bangladesh, take foreign exchange and print books there, never mind the quality. In fact, Prabhupada said more than that. He said actually if there's one thing our society has no shortage of, it's money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you take...
This is when you met Prabhupada. You were asking... You went to ask him But shall I go to the West and collect the preaching in these countries?
Yes.
They're both very poor countries. And I said, no, I'll give you money.
That's right, yeah. He said, our society has no shortage of money, and I'll supply the money, and you go and preach. Okay. So... See, he says, you have two nice fields, Bangladesh and Nepal.
Mm. So that money was sent from MDT fund?
Yeah, well, that money, the money that he sent monthly, they sent to Nepal, Prabhupada sent to Nepal, and then later on to Bangladesh, and we went back again to Bangladesh.
A stipend to help the preaching.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how did the Bangladesh preaching develop after that untoward incident?
Well, what happened was that, that it's also mentioned there about taking foreign money and printing books. So what actually happened, we went to Nepal, you know, things started to get established in Nepal. Then Prabhupada left, and just at the time when he left, I'd come to Vrindavan, just after that, for his disappearance ceremony. And the Mahavishnu Maharaj was here, and I convinced him to come to Nepal. He came back to Nepal, and then I left him in charge, like president of Kathmandu. And then I was trying to, you know, think how to develop Bangladesh. So we, Vyasaki was very interested to go.
He'd been there,
yeah. Yeah, because he'd been there, Vyasaki and Chanurari.
Right, he'd also been there on DVT 95.
And I think Ravi. Yeah, Ravi.
Ravi had been with Lokanath Maharaj. Full of that program.
Yeah, so we...
kind of fell to pieces.
The bullet carton.
Yeah, the bullet carton program. Mm-hmm. Amitabha was put in Padrakhan.
Mm-hmm.
There's only the two of them left.
So we managed to, through this printing, the idea then was to print books.
Mm-hmm.
Pancharatna was working on that. So they got 6 months visas to go as businessmen to print books. So that way Vyasaki went, and I think Ravi was with him, Chanurari maybe.
Chanurari in the beginning, I think so.
Well, maybe. And they hired High Sankesh Kanipar, that's how we started.
And then that sent it for many years.
Yeah. So then after that, and in the meantime, I think, yeah, I was made the president of Mayapur.
Right, right.
That was in
she wasn't into that at all.
I wasn't particularly into it. But anyhow, one of the things I did was, so I would, you know, just visit very occasionally Nepal and Bangladesh.
Mm.
So they were running on, yes, he was in Bangladesh doing sort of undercover but preaching, and Mahavishnu Maharaj was in Nepal.
Mm.
So then I was president of Mayapur. I was staying there from like 78 Mayapur festival on through, and then for about 6 months, and then we wanted to get some Sankirtan vans.
Mm.
So I'd gone to Europe.
For Mayapur?
Yeah, two vans for Mayapur, one for Nepal and one for Bangladesh.
Right, right.
And we're going to change them over, you know.
Right, you've got a collecting party.
I've collected some Mayapur devotees and some collecting on behalf of Nepal and Bangladesh.
You picked up a few men here and there.
Here and there. So we had, by the end, about a party of about 12, 14 devotees.
They were collecting in different parts of Europe.
Yeah, especially we collected in Germany.
Holland also.
Holland, yeah. And we got these vans and we were driving back, and I remember we'd gotten to Vienna. And Hare Krishna Maharaj was there, and Bhavananda had called up from India to say it's too dangerous, Iran, there's a big revolution going on, you can't cross Iran. So I asked Hare Krishna Maharaj, what shall we do, and he just pointed his finger like that, he said, go! So, you know, by his determined instruction, we set out, and We somehow managed to get across Iran in about 5 days, stuck on the border.
Mm.
We got across, and we brought the vans, and then by that time, you know, Nitai Chand had actually, I was the president, and we'd made him like a vice president or general manager. Mm. So while I was away, he took more and more responsibility.
Mm.
That's how he became kind of the manager of Mayapur.
Mm.
And I went with the vans, you know, to Bangladesh, and one to Nepal, one to Bangladesh, and then we started actually traveling Sankirtan. We took Rasika there at that
time. Well, it was 1979, of course. That was a little late.
That was early 79. See,
yes, right after my professor, I went for myself, Rasika, and Mahakrita across the border with the van.
Mm.
First time we went across.
Yeah. See, what happened was we brought the vans back We set up, I've been in Mayapur up until maybe September, and then we've taken the party to the west in the autumn, and then by the end of the year we set out, end of 78, early 79, we brought the vans across. So we arrived in India for the Mayapur festival, and that's right after that. Mm. And then one van already went straight up to Nepal. Another van went to Bangladesh with you and who?
Rishika and Mahakrita.
Yeah.
That's how the famous Bangladesh traveling began.
Mm.
And it's been going on ever since. Well, I can talk
okay,
quite a lot about that. And there were so many things gradually.
Well, we had that preaching base in Tej Kunipara.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a semi respectable area in Dhaka. Fortunately, the landlord was tolerant, friendly, and a lot of people started to come around to the temple, and a lot of programs were going on around the country. But still, we have kept a pretty low profile. Although the programs outside became bigger and bigger, and at one time the whole Charlie Sekhatan van was detained.
The Sikh was arrested.
He was in prison for a month. The man was in police custody for a month, but somehow, with the help of KB, I think, big man in Bangladesh, we managed to get the van back, and the Sikh was released, and the traveling secretary went on.
I can fill in, and you can send it back to you for checking and filling in things. But from about 86, gradually our position, it's just like gradually, slowly our position has become solidified. And
well, it started in 82 when we got Pundrik Dan donated, and then...
Otherwise it's always like a hit and run kind of act, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very...
Village and run.
Very paranoid and undercover.
Very paranoid, yeah.
But in 86 we got... 82 we got Pundrik Dan, and we gradually developed the temple there. And we didn't get any real harassment for it from authorities or anybody. And the Hindus saw it and they began, you know, respected. And we got land in Jeshwar and we started trying to develop something there. Then suddenly, at some point, we got the Dhaka temple was donated, and that was a big, you know, step forward, that we suddenly had a temple in the center of the capital city, and there were a lot of devotees, and, you know, that's completely changed the whole situation.
Because we're right under the nose of the government and everything.
But they've, you know...
I think that policy of very, very slowly and gradually, you know, going out in family clothes in the city, and during the government, they checked us out so many times.
Mm.
And they kind of gradually understood that we're not doing anything harmful.
Mm.
And I think probably from a political point of view, it's also quite good for them, because I'd rather the Hindus be religious than political.
Yes, yeah. They'd rather keep satisfied. Hindus and Hindu leaders, you know.
Right.
Even nowadays, the Prime Minister is going to functions. She went to a function where John Takaraj was, I think. Some big program the Hindus arranged in Chittagong. She goes to the programs in Dhaka.
Quite pacify the Hindus because they're surrounded by Hindus.
Well, they're such a tenuous political situation. They want to
try to keep everyone happy. You know.
They want the vote, just like, you know, the other way around in India.
Right.
Anyway, we've got now many offers of different properties. People have seen that we fixed up Pundrik Dam, we fixed up the Dhaka temple, we're able to, you know, run temples efficiently, and, you know, they have come now. Chalet, they've given us Yugal Pila, that's a very nice
prestigious
temple in Chalet. Kulma, they gave us a glass. So, you know, things look probably. There's been Rath Yatra in the center of Dhaka 2 years in a row.
Right, and Vijay Janmashtami function.
Yeah, Vijay Janmashtami function runs for a week.
Have all kinds of artists and ministers come.
Mm.
Huge prasadam distribution. And the local Muslim young men, they help to keep the law and order in the big rush during the festival.
Mm-hmm.
They help with the prasadam distribution.
Mm.
When there's that Babri Masjid problem, the devotees there told me that some hoodlums came to break our temple, but the local young men, they said, no, you don't touch that, this is our temple.
Yes, sir.
They give us prasad.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the government sent police to protect them. The young men He sent him away, he said, you don't need, we don't look after him.
So yeah, everything's very auspicious at the moment, and preaching going on quite enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
Book distribution is going on quite well.
Mm-hmm. It's always a tense situation because
if there are problems in India,
yeah,
then problems can occur in Bangladesh. But we've been fortunate, even though many other temples have been damaged, none of the Iskcon temples. So
there's a little damage at Pundarik Dham.
Very slight, but that is, you know.
We advertise that quite nicely to get,
yeah,
to get damage.
Just some local little. Well, once Pundarik Dham, all the walls were blown down.
Oh.
Every wall was blown down.
Yeah.
By the
cyclone.
Yeah. Dhaka temple was damaged once a little bit.
Westerners like to be a life of variety, doing exciting things, exciting life. Bangladeshi prefers to live by tradition and do things more or less the same way as anybody else does, and indeed as their forefathers have done for thousands of years in the past. Often when Western missionaries or innovators or so-called social workers, when you make their, when you try to teach Bangladeshis how to do something new, maybe some new kind of farming technique or whatever, they may go so far along the line convincing people, and someone else will come up to them and say, why do you want to do this? Do you think you're some kind of great person to do things differently in the way that our forefathers done it for thousands of centuries, for thousands of years? And that will be the end of the matter. Westerners are often accepted for what they are as being different, but Bangladeshis don't appreciate it very much if their own people take up the Western way of life. Of course, you'll find men wearing shirt and pants, and it's considered prestigious to speak English, but they don't want to go all the way.
To be Western. Understand how the right tradition. Bangladeshis, they don't easily accept the new people for their ideas.
It's on a special occasion, and obviously cook an elaborate feast. The food that they eat every day is pretty much the same every day, and women wear pretty much the same kind of clothing, and their hair is almost the same. It's all according to tradition, actually coming from Shastra. The idea of dressing yourself in different ways with different costumes is gradually having its effect in the cities. It's, even then, it's, many people consider it's not very good for a woman to dress in a modern kind of style, or a different style. Other things that it was difficult for me to get used to would be the world time asking questions, and asking the kind of questions that would be, might be considered rude according to our culture, but you can ask you. People have never met you before would ask you how many brothers and sisters do you have, where do you get your money from. These kind of questions in the West, if a new person met you, would be considered to be too personal, too much an invasion of one's privacy to ask such questions. But according to Indian culture, to ask such questions is actually a sign of respect for the person that you're interested in, and you want to know about them. That's a proper call to ask your brother. Still, because of my culture, I've been it was difficult to get used to. Another thing which was a little shocking at first, but which you get used to, is that people often talk about the state of their stomach and what kind of stool they're passing, whether it's liquidy or so many things. As people in Britain, where I'm from, speak about the weather, people, as a common topic of conversation in Bangladesh, they do about the condition of their stomach and the intestines. Another thing, according to modern Western culture, they emphasize, they romanticize the rugged individual, the person who struggles on his own and survives in a rough, tough world. But Bangladeshi ideas is just about the opposite of that. They have a sense of dependence on others. They have groups, they belong in groups, and they look to the group for support when they're in difficulty, either moral or social or economic, and similarly they have obligations to the group. And even regulating people's behavior, if someone is behaving improperly, a senior member, just like a group, the different kind of groups may be the family, it's the most essential within the village. So if someone is behaving improperly, the elders of the family or of the village, you say that you'll give our village a bad name, and that is considered, or you'll give a family a bad name, and that's considered very bad. That is considered a compelling reason to alter one's behavior. The most strong insult one can say to a man is to insult his parents, not to insult him directly. So there's very much a sense of belonging to the group. And this way, Bengalis, they feel very much close to each other, especially to members of the group, their own group, but they ask these questions about where are you from, how many children do you have. These questions are asked each other, they're very quick to make new friends and acquaintances. There's so many minor cultural things which we had to get used to, just the different gestures in the West. If you point at something with your finger, that's completely, to indicate something, that's completely normal. In Bengal, it's considered very rude. The Western style of calling someone to come by putting your finger up and waggling it towards you, it's also considered very rude in Bengal. It's a different, one has to call another by putting his hand down and indicating with his fingers. It's considered proper. Similarly, if one shakes one's head in India, it's in certain ways, it looks like the indicative gesture by which one, it looks like the gesture by which one indicates no in Britain or America. But that is an indication of assent or approval or agreement in Bengal. So all these things, you know, one just has to get used to. So Bengalis are concerned to maintain, they have a concern to maintain personal relationships, and especially within their own group. Even if they fight, even if they argue, it may often escalate into two different groups arguing with each other. A person is a member, he's not just an individual, so the person is under attack. When they're arguing, they don't see the whole group as involved. And within the group, they like to maintain nice personal relationships, and therefore, even if someone wants to be corrected, they'll do it very carefully, usually not publicly, or even if there's some feeling of dissatisfaction one member put together, the one person may not express it directly, but may express it with subtle hints. And if even then, if that person doesn't respond to the hints, then rather than speaking to him directly, he may speak to a senior person who is respected by the involved in us, that senior person to speak to the person with whom she is feeling some difficulty. So like this, very careful to maintain personal relationships with the Muslim. And even if a senior chastises the jury, he may tell them this you're doing is not proper. But he usually speak to him in a tone of voice which indicates that he's not being and speak to him in a sweet voice, which indicates that he's not being rejected, but that he's just being warned and that he should be pleased with him. The direct, frank style of dealing with Westernism is often taken by Bangladeshis as being kind of grossness or brusqueness, unnecessary, rough kind of behavior. Because of all this subtle kind of culture, we could say that the Bengali culture is very fine and very sensitive towards other people. Again, on the cultural difficulty, the Western idea of individual performance, accomplishment, hard work, activity, and efficiency are very much part of the Western success-oriented psyche. But a lot of those things, they hardly even enter the heads of most Bangladeshis. They're more concerned for them to maintain the status quo in society. It's what most people think about. Maintaining the status quo and getting enough food for himself and his family. You get a few extra things, that's nice. Most people don't really expect much. And maintaining the status quo within the society means maintaining good relationships with other people, especially those who are in a superior position to him. I can therefore either favor him or cause difficulty for him. This whole concept of success and get ahead. It's not totally foreign to modern people. They ever try to get a high education, they ever try to get a good government job, but that's about the limit of most people's thoughts. Few, very few, then venture out into the America or something. All of the sins, but most of the people don't have very great expectations and trying to get ahead in life. As I said, so their attitude and function is not one of trying to prove themselves and just maintain one part of life. It's very much part of life in throughout India, and almost beginning to make most of the traditional things. Beginning to become less common in more modernized areas is bargaining more than shopping. It's very much part of life in the Western, it's really used to. It's very much part of life in the person is just trying to cheat him because he's quoting a price which is too high. That's just the system. The person, the seller will quote a price too high for one of these things, apples and cabbages and whatever it may be. And then the person who's the buyer, the disrespectful buyer, quotes a price which is too low for his children. And the seller comes down a little bit, the buyer refuses to accept what he comes down to, and goes up a little bit, and they reach some person, and so it's good. Why? The buyer is not satisfied with the last price, as it's called, the lowest price that the seller makes, or offer them, or to someone else, or a buyer. So this bargaining is part of life. Very much part of life, kind of. Of course, it's very serious presenting the money, but it's part of the culture, it's like some of the beings in the to see who can, how much you can get the price down. Not exactly a game, because people are, both the sellers and the buyers, most of them are not very rich, and they need to use every price out of seeing them. That's just the game. But it adds, let's say, it adds fun to life. What it's talking about, when we go to village to village, people, they like to feed you. They like to feed you so much that the host would like to see that their guests are fully satisfied. And the idea is that the guest eats a lot, that means he's well satisfied with the meals in the chapter. We can eat more. And they're very expert in serving the commander who different preparations, and so this is very tasty. I don't like this very much. It's very good for health. Because I'm very foul, and they say something like, "Oh, this will help you digest your food." When you say no, you go in anymore. You can kind of understand your voice. If there's any thought while you're saying no that maybe could take a little more, you can detect that. And they'll give you more anyway. And sort of when you fold up your leaf, and say, "No, I really can't take any more," and your family. get out information here. But because they like to, as sadhus, they like to feed us with more and give us extra with the idea that we share the remnants between all the other people, at least in the family, if not the whole village. They give us more and more to make sure that we see them. Often, even while we're meeting people, they ask for remnants in the whole village. Bangladesh has not yet been engulfed by the massive cultural takeover of the world being propagated from the West through the mass media. So it's a good place to see Indian culture as in its more pristine form. One thing when especially among Vaishnavas is when they meet each other to embrace each other. This is of course man to man or woman to woman, or man to woman, but even mother and son or husband and wife could never embrace each other in public unless it's mother and son, and the son is very, very young, in which case carried around by the mother. But they'll meet each other and quite heartily embrace each other. One's in each person's head. And again they'll embrace, moving the head to the other shoulder, of each one of his head. And then again they'll go three times the head. Another thing I was saying about giving respect to others, if an elder calls a junior, Agye, on your order, and at your order, I was saying about how the country is full of so much water and hope, which is it's a different mood of the and so much on the right hand side of the country, not just my own. There are so much of the world and so much of the country. Generally, the place is lush and green, especially in the rainy season, seeing those new little rivulets spring up around there. They just tiny little rivers, but they become quite big in the rainy season, and new transport boat services open up. If it's too small, at least for a small motorboat, at least a road might just stay rowing boat from home. So sometimes in the rainy season, we'll be traveling by 4 or 5 people from through the fields and through the jungle and going through the big. Pushing aside.